as political forms throughout Western history. It probably originates around 30,000 BC with the Neolithic peoples in northern Mongolia and Central Asia, where shamanism was the rule of the day and connected people in very pragmatic ways to the land. They were connected anyway,
right,
because they were part of it. But the shamans forged a spiritual bond as well. They were the conduit of the energy between the part of the earth that was mysterious,
yes,
and human beings.
The half and half.
So there are signs everywhere. The footprints of the shamans can be found in all major Western spiritual paths.
Oh, absolutely.
Take like Persephone and Demeter and the Eleusinian mysteries.
Indeed, indeed. And you know, shamanism is a really old tradition, but I do think that probably Lamas is a little bit more recent because of the fact that agriculture is more recent than that. People at that time, I think, were hunting and gathering, and they didn't garden yet, perhaps. Maybe small on a small scale, but they were more devoted to the whatever they could come up with on a daily basis kind of food regime more than cultivating. And I think that, you know, that Lamas is the sharing of the harvest and the later on, of course, the baking of the bread is a little bit more modern, but still its roots go far, far back. People have probably been, you know, having religious practice at least for 100,000 years on this planet, maybe longer. So,
well, Lamas, you know, essentially, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it essentially celebrates, it's the fact that the earth itself is sacred.
Absolutely.
And so that when we, celebrate Lamas, we are more or less partaking in the most direct way,
yes,
in the body of the earth.
Well, of course, and you know, eating the corn, the traditionally a corn man is baked on Lamas, where you bake a man, you know, a sort of like a gingerbread man, only made out of corn or whatever else, you know, your culture uses for bread. You bake this man, and then you you know, everyone partakes in eating him literally. And of course, that sounds a lot like the eating the body of Christ, doesn't it? Sort
yeah.
of reminiscent.
Well, that's actually where that,
yes,
that
yes,
of course
indeed.
Comes from.
Of course,
every element actually of Christianity is derived
pretty
from,
much
pretty much from
pretty much.
Well, Aphrodite is the Virgin Mary, and they needed a male figure to celebrate because they were, after all, descendants of hunter-gatherers who celebrated a male sky god as opposed to a female earth god. So, hey presto, mm-hmm. Aphrodite's son became Jesus. So
mm-hmm.
that was appropriate. A great many of those elements are appropriated.
Of course, and you know, there's a long history in Christianity of doing that. So do we have a caller? We do. Well, let's talk to our caller and somebody who's already called to add something to the conversation here. So caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello, I can't hear you good. I know I've been having trouble with my telephone lines. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine. This, our phone patch is kind of, it's hard for people to hear through it, but go ahead. I can hear you
okay.
fine.
Okay. Did you say you're going to do readings?
I do have my tarot cards today. I could do one for you if you'd like.
Yeah, maybe it's the kind, I'll put it out anyway, whether you can do it or not. Maybe it's not the kind you can read for. I'd like to public hospitals. I was wondering what the possibility of getting back public hospitals. Hospitals that are not run by corporations and businesses, and also places where, whether you're low income or rich, you can have your baby in that with midwives without the corporations and that being involved. That, I suppose, you can't do a reading like that for the future.
Well, I can certainly pull a couple cards and see what we get here.
Can I ask something else?
Well, you can certainly ask another question.
I'll just hang up because I can't hear you. Okay.
I'm very sorry about that. If you can't hear us even when you're on the air, that's kind of a serious problem. I know it's hard to hear when you're on hold, and something is not right with our phone patch, and we're working on that. And I apologize to those of you. It can be very confusing if you call, because we have a delay, and what you hear over the radio is not what is it's delayed at least 15 seconds, closer to 20 maybe. And so don't be confused, but I'm going to pull a couple cards here to answer that person's question. Let's see what we can come up with. Well, let's see. Ah, that's very interesting. Well, I pulled three cards, King of Swords upside down, Seven of Staves upside down, and the Fool at the end, the New Beginnings, which is the Fool, mm-hmm. the very first major arcana card. You know, I think the first two, the King of Swords and Seven of Staves upside down, basically represent the state of healthcare where we are. It's just not good. And the fool at the last represents new beginnings, and it often means, you know, the Fool is kind of a mixed bag. It's Chris is remarking over this. I think it shows that things are really screwed up right now, but there's possibilities, there's hope, there's definitely a light at the end of the tunnel, folks, and don't ever forget that we are heading to something better. We're going to get through this, and the only way to get through this is to drop all of our issues. You know, we're so this people on this planet have become like the Hatfields and the McCoys. We've forgotten what we're mad about. We're so angry at each other. We've been fighting and squabbling over so many things for so long. We just need to drop it.
And that's where I think the Lamas business comes mm-hmm. in, because if you are have a direct personal relationship to the earth through eating
your spirituality
fruits, mm-hmm. then you are a little bit more difficult to control. It's difficult to control people who are mm-hmm. whose lives are directed by the seasons and by the earth, by growing things, because they people essentially who are part are clearly see their relationship, celebrate and participate in the life of the earth, are not going to be easily swayed by let's just say it, the fraud
yes.
that's perpetrated
and
by leaders.
I think that the meaning of this Fool card, too, especially in apropos of that person's question, is that, you know, that saying, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Part of the depiction of the Fool is that he doesn't know that he can't do this thing that he's setting off to do, so he can do it. Sort of like Chauncey Gardner in Being There. He, you know, at the end when he walks off across the pond, and he doesn't know he can't, so he does. You know, there's a great power in belief. I mean, I don't know, for those of you who haven't seen What the Bleep Do We Know, you need to. It's a very accessible and understandable explanation of quantum physics and how it works in our lives in a magical and not so magical way, in a scientific way. And it's very thought-provoking. And for those who haven't been exposed to the whole concept of string theory or quantum physics or the research on the nature of the universe that has provoked, I think it's very thought-provoking. And, you know, basically we do create a reality that's not just a new age buzz concept. At every moment, reality as we know it, as Robin Williams put it, reality, what a concept. It is a concept, because reality is very fungible. It exists only in potentiality. And how we perceive the universe and how we choose to move around in it, both psychically and mentally and physically, affects reality profoundly, which is, you know, demonstrated by all these experiments that they have done with particle physics. And so we do create our own reality, and we can never forget that, because we can definitely create our future the way we want it to be if we only remember that, you know, reality is under our control.
Thinking about Lamas this morning, I started looking around for signs of it in the greater theater of global politics, geopolitics.
Oh, yes. The whole theme of sacrifice, obviously, is really a huge one
right now.
Well,
what actually I was thinking of was in our society, we've talked about a general strike to express outrage at the leadership, and it doesn't seem like that's ever going to happen. And we see demonstrations now and then. People will turn out in the streets. They have permits. It's more of a parade, really. And then you look at other countries, and you see many thousands. It's not unusual in India for 100,000 people to turn out. It seems that people who are whose lives are connected more closely with the land, with
people
the earth,
who aren't apathetic,
raise their own food, and see who see that connection in real ways, they have no problem.
Melody says they
don't know that they can't stand up to their government, so they do.
Well, look at the million people who filled the streets of Mexico City over the late most recent election.
Exactly, and those people were not all citizens of Mexico City. They came from all over Mexico. That was mobilized a week in advance, people, agrarian people.
And these are people who have little money, who getting to town isn't just a matter of jumping in the truck and running down the street. They have no car. They have no money. They have no burro or whatever. They have to walk a lot of the time.
And they don't know, as Melody says, and you really want to stress that, they don't know that they can't do it, so they go ahead and they do it. I'll get granted, though, that some people, of course, are extremely politically aware, yet at the same time, I think that this closeness with the land,
what's all they have?
You get your food from the land, but you also fuel, I think, political dissent. Mm-hmm. If you have already forged, or part of your life is deeply committed to the earth on which you walk,
then you
are more likely to defend it and see that as the most important thing. We don't get very many people turning out. I mean, I really don't think many people turn out for
it. But that's because they know that no one is going to do it for them. See, Americans, I do believe, because we've become so comfortable, someone does something, everything for us. Someone takes care of our sewage. Someone paves our roads for us. All we have to do is walk into the supermarket and, you know, buy food. It's there. Someone grew it and brought it there for us, wrapped it up in a little plastic thing for us. Somebody takes our trash and eats it.
I've seen lots of people doing that.
Somebody takes our trash away. Somebody makes everything, in theory, for us. Of course, it's a lot of it is self-serving for them. But the point is, I think the people in Mexico and the people in India you were talking about know that no one's going to do it for them. And the people of old who, you know, first celebrated Lamas and first believed in Lu and first conducted the sacred games and understood the concept of sacrificing yourself for the good of the people. That was the God's role. He's the dying God who's born again every year, serves as a consort to the goddess, serves the people, you know, celebrates his life, and then at the end of the year, he sacrifices himself to the people, and he's born again. They understood that nobody was going to do that for them. No one was going to go out and gather those roots and herbs and catch that deer for them and put it on their plate. Nobody was going to, keep them warm unless they went out and gathered firewood and cut it up with their little axe. I mean, no one did anything for them. They had to do it for themselves. And I think that that's kind of what we've lost in modern society, is that we've lost our fire to survive because we know that someone else will do it for us.
And we also, I think, in many ways, are driven by things that aren't real, that we're driven by notions.
We got to go buy the latest jeans at the Gap. That's what's most important to us, you know.
Yeah, notions of ephemeral things that can be taken away.
Well, and I just kind of wanted to read a little bit more from this passage about Lamas and help you to understand like why this is so relevant for today. It says, games of athletic prowess are played in honor of Lu. The games are said to be funeral games for Lu. And in some traditions, his foster mother, who is honored at this festival because she died while preparing the fields for planting. Now, there's, you know, that's, you see the traditional, I don't know if you want to call them gender roles, but the traditional roles of male and female in the spiritual sense being played out here.
Or symbolic.
Yes, in Ireland, Lu Nasa is often also called the Teltian Games. In many cultures throughout history, it was the duty of the king to sacrifice, and Telti, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing her name, was his foster mother. In many cultures throughout history, however, it was the duty of the king, let me read that again, it was the duty of the king to sacrifice himself for the land, and Lu Nasa is celebrated as Lu's death, although he doesn't actually die until later in the year. Because different cultures had different details on that, you know, the shifting sands of when he dies and when he's born are different from different
essentially
traditions.
Essentially, it's like...
But let's hearken back to this duty of the king to sacrifice himself for the land. Consider, if you will, the ruling king of our society. That would be Mr. George Bush. He's the opposite of the sacred leader, the sacred God, the man, the God who dies and born and is born again, who sacrifices himself for his people. He sacrifices the people for himself. And this is why this is such a relevant exercise, I think. And, you know, at this time of year, most people are, all they're thinking about is barbecues and vacation and blah, 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 blah. And instead of, you know, all around the world, we have young men who are, you know, the fruit of this country sacrificing themselves for this, for in this grand endeavor that, you know, we've decided we want them to go get themselves killed in the Middle East. And yet, our so-called leader sacrifices nothing. He takes sacrifices. He's sort of like that giant, you know, volcano god that, you know, you just go and you throw, you know, virgins and stuff and food into the volcano to appease it so that it won't erupt all over you. I mean, you know, this is a very twisted, you know, thing that we have created here, where the leader expects the people to sacrifice themselves for him.
Well, I think what the cloud of fear that is constantly is being built over the country. This is ephemeral. It's not real.
Exactly.
It's a false bill of goods which has been sold to people to distract them from, again, as we were talking about, the earth, the very earth underneath their feet. And I think that my opinion is that this administration is built solely on providing people with false hope, false dreams, fear.
As opposed to a real harvest that is tangible.
Things that you cannot hold in your hand. Things that can easily be manipulated, thus, you know, manipulating people. If you buy into this whole mass hallucination, as it were, then you are, again, easily manipulated. You can be driven from one corner of the room to the other, in an effortless way. So building a whole society on false hopes, false dreams, and fear has produced a nation that's, I think, in acute neurosis.
Well, yes, I would say so. I think we're insane.
You can see signs of that all over the place. There's all sorts of really bizarre crimes and things of that sort. People constantly seem to be, you can rely on them to do things that are not in their best interests, because this is what they're reacting to, a hallucination, something that's not really there. Lammas is a celebration of remembrance that we do live on the earth, that it is part of us. We come from it, we return to it, and that's what's important.
It reminds me of the time that that Starhawk was here. She was on being interviewed by Mary Sterrett, who's running for governor, on AM Northwest. And Mary asked her this question. I just couldn't even believe it. You know, Mary's not the brightest tool in the shed. But
she asked
this question that I just was stumped, and so was Starhawk. To her credit, she didn't laugh. She asked Starhawk. She goes, "Well, I don't understand." She goes, "Can you please explain to our viewers how can a person be one with nature?" Starhawk just looked at her like, and she made some reasonably sensible answer. It's like, she doesn't understand. People are part of nature. You know, we tend to talk about nature like it's somehow separate from us, and we're, what, androids from another planet? Plastic? No, we are part of it. We are animals, people. Animals. Just like every other animal. We are apes. We are primates. We are animals.
Well,
we are natural.
The separation, the separation of people, human, you know, humanity, people from the earth, is, a falsehood perpetrated by Judeo-Christian tradition means of control. Once you pried people off their rock, then they're easy to control.
Yes. Well, yes, very true.
Go to the beach, find a limpet stuck to a rock. As long as it's stuck to the rock, it's fine. If you pry it off, you can toss it around.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bad done shape. Limpet. Although, in fact, limpets can find their way back to their rock 20 miles. It'll go walk.
Wow, I'm impressed. Well, hey, you know, it's 5 minutes after 8. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Yes, indeed, you do. Oh, well. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm Melody Silverwolf, and Chris Andre is sitting in here with me, and we're talking about the Wiccan holiday of Lammas and its political and social and spiritual tentacles into the world. 503-231-8187 is our number if you'd like to join that the conversation. But before we take our caller, I just have one little more passage to read here, which I thought was very relevant. Consider what's happening. The so-called leader, Mr. Bush, is going to be retreating to his cave in Mordor. I mean his ranch in Crawford for the better part of this coming month. And, of course, Ms. Sheehan, the hero of our day, has purchased acreage down there nearby, and she's going to reconvene Camp Casey, well, she and many others, and be a little thorn in his side. So let's read a little bit here from this bit, and I thought this was fascinating. Corn is one of the vital crops harvested now, and in some areas the sacrifice of the Corn King is performed. Death and rebirth are a part of the cycle Lu journeys through in his mating with the goddess. The goddess oversees the festival in her triple guise as Matcha. Now, Matcha is, she's the maiden, mother, and crone. She presides in her warrior aspect, the crow who sits on the battlefields awaiting the dead. I get this feeling that, you know, maybe there's going to be a big showdown. I just really think that Cindy and her allies represent they're like the Greek chorus who is, like, calling upon Bush to, like, you know, respond, and of course he's not going to. He's endeavoring to do everything possible. He wants all the credit of being God. He wants to be the consort of the goddess and you know, wear the fancy robes and feast on the fancy foods and be acclaimed by the people, but he doesn't want to make the sacrifice. So you know what, we have to make sure that he does.
I think that the president would do well to recall.
You mean the resident?
The quote. A quote from the Alexandrian Quartet by Lawrence Durrell. I believe it was Balthazar, correct me if I'm wrong.
I wouldn't know.
We must respect the dead, for they outnumber us.
It's very true.
Words to live by.
And you know, no in pun. Lord of the Rings, they found that out the hard way. Anyway, let's talk to our caller. So, caller, you're on the air.
Oh, good morning, Melanie. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, you guys are great. I want to talk for a brief second about our dear leader.
Oh, you mean our... Yeah.
Yes.
You
but
can
I
call him
to bring
that.
Around to
well, you know, he is.
You mean our deer leader, D-E-E-R, like is in deer in the headlights?
Well, that would be deer caught in the headlights.
It's like
right.
my friend who lives in South Dakota has a sticker on his car that says, watch out for deer with that George W. Bush in the headlights look.
That's marvelous. Well, our deer leader is now, of course, you know that our deer leader is not at all, as you mentioned, anything like the Aztec leaders of ancient times, or
no.
The Mayan leaders, or the Incan leaders, or Olmec, or Toltec, or all the other indigenous peoples of the Americas.
He's about
but
as
our dear leader now is off, not only just sacrificing people, but he's sending them all into the monster-making machinery of Iraq as well. You've seen what's happened with rapes, pillage.
Oh, yeah.
And, awful
he's
things.
He's turning out
people
orcs by the score.
By being thrown into this meat grinder. Becoming monsters that may come back to fill our police forces if they survive.
Well, and if they survive psychically, a lot of these people seem normal enough when they come home. You know, they're like, God, I'm so glad I'm back. That was horrible. And yet it's wounded them deeply psychically and emotionally.
Absolutely. Now, on the issue of self-sustainability and self-sufficiency, you know, which is what we need to turn to as a nation. I've watched over the last several weeks the Texas Ranch House program, which at first I thought, boy, this is going to be awful. And I watched it for a while because I had seen Colonial House, a PBS production.
Mm-hmm.
And this Texas Ranch House show concluded last night.
So it was showing people
it really
living like cowboys.
How you can or cannot live off the land, how
mm-hmm.
you need to work with people, et cetera, et cetera. It was really, I mean, it got down to the fine grinding powder, you know. And I would encourage people to either watch
this was
that
on PBS?
Any longer on. Or,
was this on PBS?
It was on PBS. And these people from the 21st century were unable to work with each other the way people in the 18th century used to when they were so dependent upon all that nature brought.
That's, well, they're such princesses. They might break a nail or, oh, I can't go out there without
there
my makeup
that.
On.
There
you
was
know?
That. Yeah, absolutely. There was that attitude. I mean, some, they left the dishes for 8 days.
Ew.
The modern makeup, which is created by culture and creates culture, the modern makeup of the modern American person is so vastly different because, like you say, all these things, you go to the grocery, et cetera, you go, you expect that the gas is going to be in those giant tanks at the station and so forth. And I heard also one place that if the 6,000 million, the 6 billion human beings on the earth lived as the 300 million do in America on the average.
Oh, we'd fall
we
off
would
the
have
planet.
We would require two more planet mm-hmm. Earths just mm-hmm. to sustain it.
It's really
fascinating to me, and
it's why overpopulation
Earth,
is a serious issue, even though
we need to really revere the Earth. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, and I don't think most people we don't. You know, people have lost their connection to the things that they used to revere. People were taught, you know, for assuming that people, most of the people I'm talking to, their ancestors came from somewhere else. I think probably a few of our listeners may be Native Americans, but I think the majority of us came from Africa or Europe or Asia or somewhere. In those traditions where we came from, people told us, you know, when we were being raised, what to revere. You know, they taught us a certain religious belief and revere this and revere that. And, you know, now that we're here in America, although some people still cling to those religious traditions and things like that, most of us revere the stuff we see on television. You know,
more
we revere
self,
people like Britney
self.
Spears. And, you know, we all want to be America's next top model or whatever the heck
right.
that is, you know, or
right.
be on, you know, Prairie House. Or I just, you know, We've really lost the sense of what is really sacred, you know.
And we've created for our minds what is sacred. And in fact,
yes.
not only is hate taught, but all of these belief systems are taught and, mm-hmm. and inculcated from a very early age. And I'm glad to live in Portland, Oregon, with the one
oh,
of
yeah.
the least churched states in the Union. Because
but it, you know, and because as Mark Twain said, sacred cows make the best hamburger.
And thanks, girl.
I love Mark Twain.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for your call.
I think the caller brought up a very good point, too. When living, as many people do, and I mean, it's oftentimes unavoidable through, you know, the pressure of one's personal circumstances, but living, say, in an apartment with a car to drive to the Safeway and a television set, one can get along pretty well in isolation. So
mm-hmm.
it's not necessary to learn the skills that it takes to communicate with other people in a way that accomplishes things. There's no sense of community, and there's no sense of working together with others to build something. I speak from personal experience of working with some land. It is not possible, I repeat, not possible to do it without other people. If you live on a farm and you are attempting to make a sort of a life around organic produce, you need other people. You absolutely
at least one other.
Do
it's
it.
An awful lot of work for
you
one person.
You learn how mm-hmm. to cooperate. You learn how to exchange skills and abilities with other people. I might not be able to fix a tractor, but I can do other things for people who can. And that's how, you know, that is how people who live on the land manage to function. You
well,
have to work
yes.
with community. And
and when you live on the land, children are an asset because they're not their mouth to feed, but they are also hands to work. They can help in the fields. They can help take things to market. They can help care for the other children.
You're kidding. You know, personally, I like using zombies.
It's because you're a freak. But, you know, I mean, in this society, you know, more children are not so much of an asset. In a developed society, they are, you know, we're increasingly exporting all physical labor type jobs that we can to somewhere else, and B, creating technology that does the work that people used to do, then human beings are a liability, especially when they consume the amount that we do here in America. As you said, if everybody consumed as much as we do, we'd need two more planets. So, you know, things are really changing, and so I think many people who struggle with a spiritual path, who embrace some path like Buddhism or Wicca, or you know, some path that's rooted in ancient beliefs and practices, sometimes they struggle with how to translate that to modern life. But you have to remember, I think, that what's important is that, you know, the really important things don't change. What is sacred? What is, you know, what is worth preserving, worth respecting? And, you know, human connection, connection to the earth, connection to other living animals and living things on this planet. You know, the things that don't change are, you know, should be the core of everyone's, what they hold sacred, you know. So we have tons of callers lined up here. 503-231-8187 is our number. You've got 45 minutes to call and talk to, well, at least one witch, a witch and a...
farmer.
A farmer. Okay, the witch and the farmer are in. So, caller, you are on the air.
Is that me?
That's you.
Hey, I've got a question that I wish would be asked daily, every day, on the air, if possible, repeatedly, and have this fantasy about being able to ask George W. This question in public forum somewhere. But if this is such an incredibly valiant, important effort for us to be involved in and worth all the sacrifice, and the parents should be proud of their children for, you know, being valiant and going off and fighting this war, why aren't George Bush's daughters serving their country?
What a good question, especially since, well, one of them at least, Barbara, doesn't appear to have a damn thing to do all day long. Jenna, at least, has been working as a teacher's aide, and now she's going to be moving to Mexico to teach down there, which is, well, that's a whole other, question.
Look out, Mexico!
Yeah. Yeah, really, the tequila twins is what they're called for good reason. But Barbara pretty much hasn't been doing a damn thing for a couple of years, and she could have been over there, you know, toting a rifle, and, you know, I think that's an excellent point.
What I think is important is to ask this question publicly over and over again to bring him back to task.
Yes,
about,
and how many,
the sacrifice of our children. Why aren't his daughters serving their country?
And the same thing for all the other chicken hawks in Congress.
Yes.
Who are all like, oh yeah, like Iraq, let's fight that war. None of them are vets, hardly any of them, maybe one or two of them. Out of all the people who are drumming the loudest for war, and none of their children. I think there's one guy in Congress whose son is in Iraq, and I can't remember who it is. But yeah, they're obviously very hypocritical, and I think that's an excellent point. Of course, they're adults and they're able to choose themselves, his daughters, I mean, whether or not they want to enlist, but I think it's appalling, and that's why, you know, in many ways, although I don't support, you know, forcing people into the military, a draft would be more fair in some ways than what is happening here. Because the draft, the part of the reason the Vietnam War ended is because people realized that their precious little sons and nowadays perhaps daughters would be drafted. And so that was one of the reasons why people were like, no more of this. And so I think the fact that, you know, we have an economic draft these days. Most of the people in the military turn to it because they have no other economic opportunities, and that's just not right. Great point from our caller.
And, yeah, Dick Cheney, how many deferments? Five, I believe. Was it five?
Yeah. Let's see, their name, Mary. And no.
Yeah.
Anyway, next caller, you're on the air.
Hey, what about the Mars effect?
The Mars effect?
Yeah, you know, Mars swung in close to Earth a couple years ago.
Yes, it did. It did. You're right.
And
right.
I think the Velikovsky books, you talk about the warlike atmosphere that occurs on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Caller, I thought you were going to say we missed our opportunity to send him there.
Yes, we did. Well, but you know, for those who embrace the possibility that astrology has some validity, and I know not everybody does, there's a lot of astrological, heavy-duty astrological things happening. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about the rapture and the Mayan calendar. No. I personally believe that things are really taking a shift. And I think that Mars did play its role, I think. Certainly having a planet that close to us must do something. Even the moon, which is fairly small and, what seems pretty innocuous as heavenly bodies go, has a profound effect on the Earth, obviously, with the tides and et cetera.
We move further away from Mars, you think the tension on the planet, you know, the psychological, these control beings that come out, you know, to try to lead the show, you think they're people's tendency to listen to them might diminish?
I think things are coming to a head. And I think that around 2012, which is when the Mayan calendar, you know.
I was going to get to that next.
Actually, some Mayan calendars have, apparently, I read that the dates have often been misinterpreted, that actually right about now, I think it's 2007 or something, is when they said that the dates were screwed up because of some calculation error, blah, 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 I don't know, some change in the calendar. Anyway, that around about now is when this really intense period of change is starting, and I can really feel it. I think that we are going to, it's sort of like going into a whirlpool. We're going to go into this really intense period of shifting. Hopefully the entire planet will start to wake up, and I think that we will get through it, but it's going to be really intense. It's going to be a rough ride, you know?
In that Book of the Hopi, he says about going into the fifth world, but there's a fork in the road.
Yes, yes.
And those people that want to take the European ways, that way will come to a dead end, but the other way will keep going.
Yes, and I do think that, you know, it's kind of like, you know, are you on the bus or are you off the bus?
So
and
we shouldn't
know.
Be like Bush voters now, huh?
Probably not.
We should be like, maybe like blockade and like, you know, getting in the way and
I think we just need to
stuff.
I think the most important thing that people need to do right now is not to succumb to fear, not to succumb to all of the things that basically the people in the administration are fear-mongering to their utmost, because that is the best way to control people, to keep them fearful and off base. And
John Lennon
don't buy into it.
Free your mind instead.
Right on. Right on. Absolutely true.
I think they also trade in illusion.
Yes.
That's the illusion of safety. When we read about this terrible waste in the Department of Homeland Security, which was cobbled together from 22 other agencies in the government, it seems that it doesn't matter if they do a good job of protecting borders, responding to two crises and things like that. They never were meant to. It's an illusion. If you create fear, and then you create a problem, and then you create a solution for it. Neither one is based on anything real. And I think this is a terrible, terrible fraud, the lie that is at the center of this whole administration. It's corrupted every part of the government. Now, we have a Congress that does absolutely nothing, like debating about flags and so forth. When the rest of the world is virtually on fire, and we are responsible for that. We are responsible. This is our, like it or not, this is our president. And are we waiting for, I don't know, people from another planet, people from Canada, maybe the French? Is somebody going to come along and rescue us from our own, what we've done? We've created a monster, and it is our responsibility to control it. Nobody else is going to come and save us from ourselves. So I do think that Cola made a very good point. I want to, what Melody said is very important, this sense that there is a huge change coming. I wish that I could completely share in that belief. My concern is that if you look at history, people don't actually behave very well in crises. They do tend to look out for themselves. And don't forget, we've got a population in this country that has been conditioned by its isolation from the earth and by the paternalism of the whole society of the government. It's been conditioned to think only in terms of its own, what it perceives to be its own self-interest. And a great deal of what the society sees as its own self-interest is an illusion. So basically, we may be looking at a panicked citizenry that is, it'll be rather like in the medieval ages when people at the end, again, this relates to llamas, people got to the end of the grain that they had stored, particularly rye grain, that they had stored from the previous season. They got down to the dregs just before llamas.
Ergot had infected it, yes.
They ate the grain that was infected with this mold, and it caused whole villages to go absolutely nuts. responding to what? To an illusion. They were out of grain. It was right before
yes.
the celebration of the first fruits of the harvest.
Yes. And we know that, you know, we know that it's easy for people to hop on the bandwagon, so to speak, and, you know, do these crazy things. I mean, consider that story, The Lottery by Shirley Jackson. I mean, you know, I just really think that we need to keep our heads about us, not to just go running off like lemmings, when, you know, we, you know, someone, a lot of that, and this whole groupthink thing that happens when people listen to Rush Limbaugh and people like that. We really need to avoid that. Need to, like, just let go of our fears and, you know, be true to ourselves and stay calm and, you know, connect with the people that we love, and that's going to get us all through. 503-231-8187 is our number. We're talking about the Wiccan Festival of Lammas and its political and spiritual ramifications, and let's talk to our next caller now. You're on the air. Hello?
So, would that be me?
That would be you.
Good morning.
All right. I just found it very interesting that the way the conversation went right now is exactly what I wanted to talk about.
Synchronicity.
That I believe that one of the reasons why this country, the vast majority of people in this country are reacting the way they are to what's going on the planet, is that we have been conditioned to live in isolation. We don't know how to live together anymore.
No.
I absolutely agree with you, Paula.
It took a while to happen. I mean, I was born into a huge family. I mean, not just brothers and sisters, but aunts and uncles and parents, and we farmed. And my grandparents had a large farm also, and so we grew all of our own food, and that was just in my lifetime, so that was like 30 or 40 years ago. And as an adult, this world is alien to me. I am mostly alone. I have to make great effort to be in community with other people. I have to go outside of my normal routine every day to find a certain group of people to hang out with, to share deep spiritual and personal ideas with, and to share community. And one of the frustrations I have with the way the world is organized right now is that I do know how to farm, and there's lots of people who would like to know what I know. I was raised on a huge farm. We raised all of our food, including orchards. I know a lot about trees, a lot about plants. I know a lot about growing food in the Pacific Northwest.
Well, you should be teaching people.
I'm very into wild plants. My father would take us into the forest and teach us everything about the plants, including their medicinal qualities, but I have no way to have a community to share that with. And I did have my own farm. I had 30 acres, and it was me and my two daughters, and I almost killed myself doing that. I couldn't do it, and I tried to get people to come, but most people wanted a lot of money to live there to help me, and I didn't have a lot of money, and so I just stopped doing it, and it's
well, do you live in Portland?
No, not anymore. I was in Portland for 3 years. I now live in the Salem area,
well,
and I live on a very small farm with a couple of other people, but they really don't farm it. It's just mm-hmm. really pretty, you know.
It's not that far, really, to Portland. It occurs to me that perhaps the people at the Tryon Life Farm yeah. would really welcome your input. Are you familiar with the Tryon Life Farm?
Yeah, I actually lived there for a while.
Well, then,
I live there for a while. I helped them uh-huh. plant their new orchards.
Yeah, it seems like that people like that could really use your help, because they exist to pass on those skills.
Caller, if you'd like to leave a name and number
with the engineer.
With the engineer, I think that there are ample opportunities, and that I'm a master gardener myself, but I know of many ways in which you could share your
yes, one that occurs to me is to have somebody come follow you around while you point out, you know, do this, a videotape you, and then put that on cable access, you know.
Well, I don't know about that part. I'm pretty shy.
Well, you could wear, you know, dark glasses or something. I don't know.
Well, see, and that's part of it. You know, that's the way that we're told that we're supposed to make community if we have something to share. And what I'm missing is the intimacy, not through a television set or a computer, but the group process of communicating and caring for each other over a long period of time.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Definitely. Please leave your name and your number. I know of many. I myself live out in Troutdale, and it's very much an agricultural community.
Thank goodness. Still.
Yes, we're trying to hang on to that.
Well, I encourage people that when they're feeling this isolation, it's not that there's something wrong with them. They don't need to do anything to make their feelings go away. Like, you know, I mean, often, and I work in with people as a social worker. I work with people all the time who say, I feel very lonely. I went to the doctor, and he told me to take this drug.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, why do you feel lonely? And they say to me, no one's
lonely.
Ever asked me that.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, you're
and
lonely because you are.
That is odd. You know, we are animals.
We're supposed to be social animals, and we are not anymore. We find our friends on the television.
Right.
On the internet. We sit in isolation and in our rooms. We eat food. We have got no idea where it comes from.
Yes. We sleep alone.
How on earth it got.
As opposed to, you know, like I remember watching, I think it was in Quest for Fire many years ago. I went to see that movie, and it depicted the people, who were all at night, they were all sleeping in this cave around nearby a fire, and they were all sleeping in a big puppy pile, you know, all cuddled together, like, you know, sort of some on top of each other, everyone just slept in a big pile together.
Well, I have to tell you,
were different then.
I'm one of 13 children, and as a child, I slept in a bed with five of my siblings, and I loved it. We told each other stories, and we tickled each other, and we talked about what happened during the day until we fell asleep. We told each other fairy tales that we would make up, you know. It was just such an amazing experience. And sometimes I just wonder,
six of you in one bed, my goodness. How did you fit in there?
I know. And I encourage people not to feel like it's something wrong with them. There definitely has been a very big breakdown of intimate community in our world, and we don't know how to communicate with each other anymore because we watch television and we get on the computer. That's not the same thing as learning those kinds of social skills that you need. You learn those by, you know, you go through something, maybe you were even hurtful to somebody, and you learn, wow, I hurt that person. I'm not going to do that again.
Yes.
But when you have that flat kind of experience with electronics, where you aren't able to get that feedback, you don't learn anything. You don't, and then there's the whole.
Well, you do
thing
if you talk to people online, but it's a very different experience to communicate with someone who you don't see in front of you, who just to have a long term.
There are so many cues that
you miss.
Physical cues.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can tell if I'm talking to somebody and I'm standing face to face with them, and they're not liking what I'm saying. They don't have to say a
you can tell,
word.
Yeah.
Even if they're smiling, you can see, you can literally feel it. You could have somebody almost turn their back to you, and you can feel what their response
is
to
the
words.
It isn't just our voices that communicate. We have these energy that's within us that goes out into the community around us and feels things. That's my experience in really learning that about plants, too, is that when I'm around other human beings, not only am I watching and hearing, but I extend, like, my aura out into it to feel. And that feeling is a huge part of our psychology. It's part of our spiritual balance. That's how we really, really are healthy in the world. And we're losing that because of this isolation with machines. And I just, again, want to encourage people that if they feel lonely, it's real.
Yes, of course it is. No, drugs are not the answer to that.
Make changes.
Well, and the thing too, the illusion, again, this is part of this critical illusion that has been sold to us along with the fear, is that if you feel lonely, there's something wrong with you.
Take a pill.
Yeah, that's
right.
The illusion.
Thanks so much for your call because you made some really great points.
All right.
Keep on keeping on.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Gosh, we've got about 25 minutes left here until it's time for the zine. And we have some folks waiting just to join this conversation. One of them could be you. 503-231-8187. And let's talk to our next caller. You're on the air.
Good morning. Some
See,
of the callers calling in have talked bad about the European side of our life here in the United States, and I think that what the real problem here is the ruling class dominance on our society and the mass marketers who control the economy and the lawmaking and the growth patterns and all of these things. And, you know, I lived in Europe when I was in the military, and I would say that most of European life, even today, is closely tied to the earth. You have to get out of the cities to
see
it.
I agree with you. Yes.
And you see actually wonderful cooperative communities in the villages that have existed for, in some cases, thousands of years, and
mm-hmm.
most for an average of 500 years. And the structures and houses are huddled together to conserve heat, and they also use the thermal mass for cooling, and the economic operations are intensive manual operations that produce specialized products that really provide wealth. I mean, the people there have been trading goods and services around their river networks of trade for thousands of years. You know, they know that the Stonehenge stones came
mm-hmm.
from, like, whales. And,
well, I agree with all that.
You know, so there's been commerce, there's been trade. We don't need these ruling class fascists telling us, you know, that we should consume more or shop more or buy more gasoline. I mean, these guys are like the parasites of society.
Yes,
they're the mass marketers. They're the equivalent of a Roman patrician family that no longer had to fight in the wars and could just sit back
mm-hmm.
and order society like a bunch of slaves. And, you know, what the American people need is they need a conversation. They need an economic vision and leadership to
Some
show
education
that there's an
would
alternative
be nice.
To the ruling class dominance.
We're just so many Americans are so ignorant about so many things.
Well, they've
you know,
been trained. They haven't
yes.
been educated.
Well,
been
we haven't been
perform.
Educated. That's very true.
They've been trained to perform certain things.
Yes.
And they perform their tasks. They
well,
not
only that, we
they
know
make
more
money
about.
And they buy stuff. That's the whole point.
We
the
know
idea
more.
Is not to produce an educated populace. The idea is to
yes.
produce consumers. And I'll tell you
mm-hmm.
something too, caller, that I think that you bring up a very good point. People are very often say, oh, you know, boo-hoo-hoo, this country's a mess. I'm going to a different country, New Zealand, Canada, wherever. Don't forget that Canada is the way it is because of Canadians. New Zealand is the way it is because of New Zealanders. They
True.
Made their country that way.
True.
European countries are the way they are because
of
Europeans. They made those conscious decisions.
Yes, they did.
America is the way it is because of Americans.
Yes.
The most important thing right now, the challenge and the opportunity is to stand and fight. And not to...
Well, maybe not to fight, but to try to change people's hearts and minds.
I mean, let's say struggle.
Yes.
Their jihad?
Well, you know, and I think you made a great point, caller, in the, you know, you were talking about the, you know, the Roman ruling classes. I think that, you know, nowadays, unfortunately, we have been catapulted back to the relative economic position. The average American today is in the same relative economic position to the ruling class as his or her ancestors during feudal times in Europe were to the lords. I mean, this is literally, we are literally living in feudal times when you talk about relative economic standing of the common people versus the ruling class.
And
if you hearken back to the diggers of that time, the diggers were a legendary movement who just stood up and said, no, you know, we don't want you to rule our lives. All we want is our land. We want our lives. We want our agriculture. We want our communities. We want you to leave us the hell alone. And, you know, I think that the diggers can be very and a great inspiration in this day and age.
I want to say that up until the year 1066, all of Europe was living cooperatively. People had pilgrimages, long vacations in the form of a road trip. They had a lot of festival days off. The church protected weekends by ensuring that people had a shopping day and a day of worship. The ruling classes did not supervise the peasants and workshop workers. Their own professions and the seasons of the earth dominated or helped guide their lives, and the ruling class did their ruling class thing. The politics started going bad in 1066 when one duke conquers England and imposes an iron-fisted form of fascism.
Mm-hmm.
He disarmed the English people. He ruled from behind 10 feet thick castle walls.
Well, that sounds
he
familiar.
Set up a court system that we still, you know, this circuit court is called a circuit court because the ruling class couldn't afford to maintain open offices in every town and village, so they had to travel about in a circuit with a heavily armed guard to conduct the justice cases. So we don't see it. You have to study to find out that we're living in a form of fascism, and all the land and property was the property of the king, and he can
parcel it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty easy to see that we're living in a fascist.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know, but what I'm saying is that as you dialogue with the American people, you have to slowly introduce these ideas to them so that they can see what the ruling classes are doing. They can see what types of mismanagement and these foreign fiascos have been set up, and that it's a malignant militarism that
like
you have
that.
These
malignant
globe-trotting
militarism.
Warmongers out looking for fights, I think to start with, the 100 million that voted against Bush are probably pretty willing to go into a cooperative life where we try to keep our spending money, our dollars, out of the pockets of these fascists, and just sort of a economic resistance from below. But we also need to keep talking and
yes.
learning and knowing, you know, knowing who the fascists are, how they maintain their control.
Very true.
And what kind of alternatives exist, because there are alternatives.
Yes, there are. Well, some great points. I've got to move on, and there's a bunch of other people waiting to join this conversation, so thanks for calling.
Okay.
Take care. Well, gosh, we've got about, 18 minutes left in this show, and let me tell you why you should stick around at 9 o'clock. Believe me, you want to. You'll hear an interview with Munzer Sleiman, who is the Washington Bureau Chief for the magazine Al-Mustaq Bal al-Arabi, and the Vice Chair of the National Council of Arab Americans. He's just returned from a visit to Beirut and Damascus. At 9:30, Dr. Deborah Lipstadt speaks on History on Trial, My Day in Court with David Irving. Ooh, that should be interesting. David Irving, of course, is a notorious Holocaust denier. 10:30, Pat McGuire, woohoo! Hearst, Boneheads and Bigots, one of my favorite shows on KBOO. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, hear an excerpt from an interview with the leader of Hezbollah, who spoke with a group of former U.S. ambassador diplomats in Lebanon earlier this year. Also hear from former Haitian Prime Minister Yvonne Neptune, who was freed from prison yesterday after more than 2 years. And the whole Haitian thing is so complicated. Anyway, 503-231-8187, and let's talk to our next caller. You're on the air.
That could be me.
It is you. It could be.
I'd like to thank my sister from Salem, the farmer, for calling in this morning and
mm-hmm.
making her clarifications and her expression of desire to network. And I'd like to let her know that I'm a farmer that was called off the land to fight the fascist forces in the big city, and that my primary mission has been of late to take the balls and chains off of people that need to be free without much success. However, I'm responding to her as a fellow farmer who needs to go home. I'd like to have her take down my number and give me a call. In Portland, my number is 503-287-1240. And thank you, ladies.
Thank you so
thank
much,
you
for
very much for calling.
That is, it's wonderful to hear your voice echoing similar sentiments and reaching out to your sister. The experiences that you two and your siblings shared have, I think, made two remarkable human beings, and we're just very, very glad that you called.
Well, maybe I'll even talk to the engineer and leave my number for her in case she was temporarily turned to her farmer duties.
By all means, do. That's what community radio is about. It's the community, and if we can...
I continue to hold out that hope.
And don't hang up, too. Talk to the engineer. We'll probably go to another call because we've got
precious little
time left. But by all means, stay on the line. Go to the engineer and leave your number. And I'm sure that we can get everyone connected.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling.
Well, you know, before we go to our next caller, I just wanted to share with those of you out there who, might be interested in celebrating, might be interested in celebrating Lammas, but aren't quite sure exactly how to go about it. I want to share with you a little excerpt from these articles that I printed out about the traditional way of celebrating. Here, this is the way that it says, until recent days in Scotland, the first cut of the harvest was made on Lammas Day, which is, it depends on how you usually celebrate on August 1st. August 1st, the 31st of July, the 2nd, somewhere in there. It was a ritual in itself. The entire family dressed in their finest clothing and went to the fields. The head of the family, which is presumed in this to be a man, but it doesn't have to be, would lay his hat on the ground and, facing the sun, cut the first handful of corn with a sickle. He would then put the corn sunwise around his head, that's clockwise, three times, while thanking the god of the harvest for corn and bread, food and flocks, wool and clothing, health and strength, and peace and plenty. And then he would proceed with some more, he would harvest some more of the corn, and people would, return to their home, and they would, of course, bake the corn man and share in eating him. So, I think that... there's some ancient traditions can be brought into the modern time, and that would be kind of fun if you are growing corn in your garden to go out and even if they're not quite ripe, you can pick a little bit of it and do a little ceremony and make a corn man.
Yeah,
and also
could be anything else too. I mean, suppose you live in the city, you see grass, tall grass growing all sorts of places. Mm-hmm. As long as you don't think there's too much in the way of exhaust fumes on it, just, pull a stalk of grass
yes,
and eat it. It connects you with
yes.
things that you need to be, for one's
That's
own.
That's right. Well, and also, another thing we haven't really talked about is that Lammas was also a very much associated with the sensual and with sexuality. And so it was a time when sometimes sacred marriages would begin, and for the traditional year and a day period, those are called Tailton marriages after Lou's adoptive mother, who was, she was rather free with her sexual favors. And so, it's a time, it's a good time to celebrate the fact of being alive, the fact of that fertility and sexuality and the harvest are all connected. In fact, in my tradition, revived form of Wicca, when we bake the corn man, we bake him and then we give him a phallus made out of a carrot. You can cut the end off to make it sort of stick up. If he's laying flat on the pan, then you give him this carrot. And, when we pass the corn man around, the first person to begin the feast, the priestess or priest or whatever person is leading the ceremony, takes the corn man and holds it up and, shows him to everyone and blesses him, and then takes his phallus carrot and takes a bite out of it and throws the rest into the bushes so that they can bless the land, and then passes the corn man around to be eaten. So it's kind of a fun little thing to do if you're so inclined. And, inject a little levity into life.
listeners?
Humor is a good thing. So let's talk to our next caller.
It beats pulling up a piece of grass next to the
road. Probably. I think so. It's more fun. But grass works too.
Would the woman who called in and talked about being a farmer and growing up on a farm and missing it, please call back in so that we can get your number and make sure that we get all the connections made?
Hook you up here behind the scenes. Okay, so, but next caller, you're on the air.
I love community radio.
Well, good morning.
Good morning, LJ. How are you?
I'm very, very wonderful. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm really enjoying the show.
Good.
Because as you know, I'm a village elder, and
better than being a village idiot.
Well, okay, both things. okay.
We already have one of those. His name is George W. Bush.
Position's already taken.
In my lifetime, I've noticed a huge cultural shift. All right, I'm from back east, and I was raised in an immigrant neighborhood because I'm first generation American, and although we lived in the quote inner city, all right, there was a deep sense of community. People were responsible for each other's kids. If you messed up, all right,
everybody knew about it and told your mother.
Well, my mother knew about it before I got home.
Oh yeah,
you know, and like that. And today, we have been dehumanized to the point where the mass marketers don't even consider us people; they consider us consumer units.
And to the point where, as the earlier caller said, if you go to the doctor and you say, "Well, I'm really depressed and lonely," they give you a pill.
Or as King George told us, you want to show those terrorists that we're not afraid of them? Go to the shopping malls and max out your credit cards.
Oh, my God.
You know, I mean, it's to the point now, Ms. Silverwolf and Ms. Andre, that our only value to this society is our consumption.
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm. Most people, that's how that is their lives. They consume and they produce waste.
Yeah.
And there is nothing else.
The job is
nothing to do with them. Something you don't like very much, don't understand very well, and allows, although I'll give you that it certainly allows people to vent a great deal of aggression. Anybody that's driven I-84 recently, it was just, there's a lot of aggression. But I think that people do seem to have their lives have been reduced to consuming and producing waste.
Oh,
and
my God. Don't even get me started. There's a new Hummer commercial on TV that just exemplifies that. I wanted to throw my television out the window last night after I saw it.
Well, this is, again, you know, the illusion that all of us have been seduced into participating in, is that we don't like the way we look. We look like we want to look like something else. We want to have, the car is going to make us feel better. Now you have to buy a lot of stuff. The more you consume, the more that it sort of feeds the flames of this terrible illusion that I would submit to you is destroying us as a society.
Absolutely. And it's my understanding now, that there's a company out that's going to start to market to kids on school buses on their
that's already happening.
And throw-up bags, too, on airlines. They're going to put ads on the throw-up bags.
Oh, my God.
And I also heard that while you're waiting to fill up your gas-guzzling SUV, while hanging out at the gas pump, there's also going to be advertising.
Well, you know, there's been advertising.
There is in Albertsons. There's an Albertsons in Gresham that I used to go there if I desperately needed, I don't know, toilet paper or something. I tried to avoid the place, and now I avoid it 100% because they have televisions at the checkout stands, and I couldn't believe it. People stand in the lines with their carts full of stuff, staring at a screen that's trying to sell them more stuff.
Well, you know, I knew that we were going to hell in a handbasket. The first time I went into a bar and went into the use of the ladies' room, and I went inside and closed the door of the stall, and there was advertising on the inside of the toilet stall
Absolutely.
Door. Absolutely. I just was like, okay, this is the final straw. Absolutely. You know, LJ, you made some great points. I love it when you call, but we got to let you go
okay,
so we can squeeze in one last person.
Have a wonderful day. Thank you for
you too.
Thanks
happy
for calling.
Llamas and have yes. a good life. Okay, this might be our last call since we only have about 5 1/4 minutes left.
Oh,
so
I thought you were going to say 5 seconds.
No.
That's the other programs.
So, welcome to the show. Hello.
Good morning.
Hello? Go ahead.
Oh, I called so long ago I forgot what to talk about. Sorry.
It's a KABU moment.
I did have something on my mind. Two things.
But the goats ate it, right? No.
The harvest is a sad time for me. I'm rural, and I've had a farm for about 37 years, and it's a time of more work.
Yes.
You're bringing in what you've grown. You're putting up. It's getting darker. The birds, there's a time the birds stop singing in the morning. I don't know why. And you know winter's coming. You know it's starting to be fall. They don't burst into song just before the light comes into the sky.
I think maybe because
happened,
they're not mating anymore.
It happened last night here, and I just was amazed. Usually as soon as they stop, the crickets start cricketing.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a really tough summer because of the heat. There are more insects and more biting flies. I have animals. I have dairy goats.
And that's very hard when it's super hot.
A lot of biting little things. So I'm covered with bites, and it's the heat seems to, the global warming, other than making George's planet have prettier golf courses and more flowers, does bring other problems, the spread of different kinds of insects. The other thing I wanted to say was the zone in the ocean, the 70-mile long zone.
It's a lot bigger than 70 miles. Mm-hmm. It stretches from the Oregon to Washington. There at the bottom of the ocean is littered with dead fish. They died
right.
of hypoxia. There's no the upwelling that is mm-hmm. that we normally expect.
Didn't get.
It's not happening anymore. It's pretty much life is coming slowly coming to a standstill. Maybe not so slowly off of our coasts. The dead zone is much larger than 70 miles.
Yeah, they said Lincoln City to Florence on the news. I would imagine.
Oh no! Oh, it's much bigger than that. There is an OSU study you can find it on the internet.
I wish I hadn't called in.
I'm
sorry. We just depressed you more.
It was bad enough that.
But
it was
you know,
70 miles.
this too will pass. I mean, the seas have been through some really awful things in the past. They've recovered.
The planet is that you know some things live. Maybe this planet's history will be the algae that eats oxygen.
Yes, and this is kind of like a cosmic poker game.
Wars.
You know, we win some hands, we lose some, and unfortunately, you know, death and rebirth are constantly with us, and so
and species.
Yes,
we might not be, though we're the species that blows things to pieces. We might not end up being the dominant species in the end.
That's right.
Because of global warming.
Well, just have faith and, you know, try to remember that this is all part of the cycle. If you are low energy and depressed and fearful now, that will pass as the cycle of time moves along and the wheel of the year turns, that will hopefully pass along with it and that you'll be more hopeful and more ready for the
change,
future.
Though, Ani, I welcome change because it'll bring me spring again.
Yes, that's right.
And that's
right.
My favorite.
Well, we're almost out of time, but thanks for calling.
Bye.
And take care. So, gosh, this has been such a quick show, you know.
Yeah, the time, it's just gone. So badly about the last caller.
I know.
It's like, wouldn't you know it, I'd have to get under the thing about the dead zone off the coast.
Well, you know,
it's true,
I think she's just a very sensitive person, and, you know, as many people are, and, you know, the truth is painful and difficult. It's like coming out of a dark hole into a very bright day. You're just, like, blinded, and you can't bear to look.
Especially if you're used to living in this illusion that's being created. By the current administration in order to sneak the fascist, I guess, let's just say it is fascist, the elements of the government right past people. As long as you're living in this shared hallucination, in this huge illusion, it's very, very easy to miss. Life is an illusion, though.
That's what we learn from What the Bleep Do We Know. And, you know, it is an illusion, and yet it is very real at the same time. And we all... we all co-create this life, and try to remember that your thoughts and your emotions and your actions really do matter, not just to you, but to everyone. And try to do the best you can to make this the world that we choose to live in, and every moment of every day. We're almost out of time, so thanks a lot for sitting in with me.
And thank you for inviting me.
Indeed.
And all the callers that called in, thank you so much. We love to hear your voices.
Have a great life, everybody. Until next time around, and keep on being positively revolting. Bye-bye.
Hear about first contacts on Crossing East.
Chinese ships were incredibly seaworthy.
There are so many people up and down this coast of Hawaiian descent, as I am.
So they decided to build their Filipino villages along the bayous of Louisiana.
Crossing East, the first Asian American history series on this radio station.
That's next Tuesday at 10 a.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Stay tuned to hear an interview with Munzer Sleiman, Washington Bureau Chief for the magazine Al-Mustaqbal al-Arabi and Vice Chair of the National Council of Arab Americans. He has just returned from a visit to Beirut and Damascus. And at 9:30, it's Dr. Deborah Lipstadt speaks on the history on trial, My Day in Court, with David Irving.